Welcome into this week's edition of New Track Record Podcast. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney with you. And this week we're joined by a special guest, Rob Howden, our Road to Indy insider, also IndyCar pit reporter on the Pennzoil IndyCar Radio Network. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Caleb, great to be here. Hope you guys are well and getting ready to start the new season.
All right, so we got some news this week in Indy Lights because I was getting curious if we'd have any more than the 12 announced drivers that we'd had for quite some time leading into Barber here in just a couple of weeks. And we got news. Antonio Seravalle is announced to be the 13th car on the grid for Pecera Racing. So we have 13 cars. And you mentioned the other day that we could have 14 cars. So what's the latest on Indy Lights car count?
You know, I just said 12 cars have been confirmed for quite a long time, spread about the teams. The new one obviously was coming together over the last 3 or 4 weeks with Antonio Seravalle, as you said. It's kind of a team being run by his father, Peter Seravalle, hence the Pecera name. They were able to get the car from Charles Finelli that he had, the Dallara IL-15 chassis, and they put it all together. They've got Jim Locke working with them. I believe they're working on the car out of Merle Swan's shop right now in Brownsburg. So that's kind of coming together. It's late, but it's coming together, and they're putting it all in. And as you might have saw from their press release, they're actually looking at expanding to 2 cars, if possible, sometime down the line. So that's a really cool addition, obviously, to the program. Brings us to 13 cars and then potentially even more growth if they do add a second car later this year or into 2022. The 14th car is a driver who has tested already this year with Juncos Racing. It's Nate Aranda. He ran last year with them in their Indy Pro 2000 series team. And he's looking at putting in a partial schedule. Won't be a full schedule for Nate. He's going to kind of dip his toe in the waters, do some more testing. But we should see him at a couple of races this year. So there's an opportunity for us to have 14 cars on track at a little less than a handful of events here in 2022.
And that's got to be exciting, Rob, because, you know, the top pillar of the Road to Indy, we always look at car count. And do you feel, you've talked for so long about the momentum of the series. Are we finally starting to see that momentum now translate to bigger fields?
Yeah, I really believe that. Since taking my new role at the Road to Indy as their series development director, I've really reached out and did a lot more, conversations both on the phone and through social media, just DMing guys racing over in Europe. And there was a number of guys that I think were kind of lined up to potentially get into seats. And at least on my list, I got at least a handful of guys that were looking seriously at coming to Indy Lights, but then either had some budget issues or just elected to go in another direction. So there's a lot of awareness around the world and a lot of interest around the world. And I think, when we were running at single-digit cars, I think that's tough to build the momentum. Even though the Road to Indy has the scholarship, which is so crucial, right, to get to IndyCar, and is so attractive, when you only have eight cars, that's tough. You know, I always say that, numbers breed numbers, because the more cars you have, the more people want to be part of the program. But now moving forward, there's so much good stuff right now. A lot of interest, as I said. We got 14 cars. That's easily going to become 16, right? Then 16 becomes 18, 18 becomes 20. And I'll tell you, Justin, for me, the thing that's most exciting, in addition to having double-digit cars and a good field of really, really talented drivers this year, is I've been in conversations with potentially anywhere between 2 and 4 new teams for next year, which is really exciting. There's a lot of interest in it. Obviously, we got the halo on the car now, which makes it a little more attractive, I think, to some of the European drivers. But, man, there's just the new teams are the one that really excite me for next year.
Rob, and tell us, about new teams when they come in. I mean, I'm sure every team is different. Some just want to be a junior team. Others have aspirations to eventually get into IndyCar. But when you have these conversations with prospective new teams and teams that have come in, what do they say about, we've heard, it's just a great feeder system, a great ladder, but is the ultimate goal to get to IndyCar? Or are some of them just saying, hey, we're just going to be a junior team and that's our niche? I mean, is it a combination of both?
Yeah, I would say a combination of both. I think the guys that we're talking to now are that are interested, that I'm talking to, providing information for to kind of get set up for 2022, they're growing from within our program. Without naming names, we're looking at teams that are already established in USF 2000 or Indy Pro 2000 that are potentially looking to add an Indy Lights component for next year, right? So they're working their way forward. Those team owners, do they have in the back of their mind, you know, that dream of potentially starting an IndyCar team? I would have to believe it's probably there. You know, in talking with Michael Duncalf from Exclusive Autosport, when he advanced into Indy Lights and, of course, then sold his cars just because of the way the whole COVID pandemic situation kind of locked things down. He's told me before, too, that his ultimate goal would potentially have an IndyCar team, but that's such a huge jump, even from Indy Lights, right, to be able to put a team like that together. But I think the other key thing is that years before me, and one of our focuses is to hopefully try to get some IndyCar teams to look at, you know, going back the other direction as opposed to guys moving up. You know, Andretti Autosport has been so huge for the series, you know, kind of the one of backbone programs, having four cars a year kind of a thing. They've used the series to be able to move over the wall guys, mechanics, engineers, developing talent into their team. And that's one of the selling features that I think you're going to see. I'm talking to one of the IndyCar owners who's potentially looking at doing something for next year, and to be able to develop staff is one of the key benefits that we're looking for. Of course, drivers as well, but to be able to develop staff too.
Now, Rob, we have spring training coming up at Barber April 6th, so that's next week. 13 cars entered, including Antonio Seravalle, who was just announced the other day for the 2021 season. We talk about the depth of talent in the IndyCar field. You know, it seems like every year for the past couple of seasons is how it just keeps getting better and better. But looking at this lights field, I mean, this is the deepest lights field I think I can ever remember.
Well, the great thing about it, obviously, is, you know, we had the shutdown for COVID, so we've got all these extra scholarship drivers. You know, we didn't even have one scholarship driver. It was going to be, of course, Kyle Kirkwood in 2020, the winner of the Indy Pro 2000 Series in 2019. Now we throw in our 2020 Indy Pro champion, Stenson Hanke. These two very, very talented American drivers who won a lot of races in getting their Indy Pro 2000 championship. But then you got some of the veterans coming back who are all race winners as well. That's one of the things I've been looking, you know, at kind of throwing some of the stats together. I'm not Steve Wittick when it comes to stats, but I'm looking at some of the stats. And every one of the teams we have in the program now have either won races or the drivers they have won races. So to me, it's just amazing to see that. You know, Toby Sowery is a race winner, you know, and he's going to run with Juncos Racing this year. The field that we have now, it's got such depth in terms of veteran drivers who have winning pedigree, or guys, you know, young guys that are right on the ready to break out like a David Malukas. So this is going to be, if I sat back and just tried to tell you what the top five would be for qualifying for race one at Barber, in the middle of April, I don't think I'd be able to do it, because it could be five drivers or five other drivers. That's how deep the field is.
Can you think of a year that had a deeper field where it felt like the championship was more wide open than this season? I mean, it seems like there are two or three guys every year that you know to keep your eye on, because those guys will, you know, contend for the championship, and we'll expect to see one or two of those guys advance to IndyCar the following season, and that's kind of how I follow lights from afar. But this year, I don't even know who to kind of keep my eye on, because it seems like it's five, six, seven guys.
I know, it's exactly that. The funny thing you say, that I actually went back and looked at a bunch of, you know, the results, the actual championship standing some years back, going through, thinking, how many, you know, when was the last time we had this deep of a field? And, you know, if you go back to even the first year of the Dallara IL-15 in 2015, Carlin came in and we didn't really know what Carlin was going to be able to do. Obviously, they came out of the gate strong with Max Chilton and Ed Jones, and Matt, yeah, they were quick. But then, you know, then you had the Schmidt team, and you had Juncos Racing was able to win the championship with Spencer Pigot. It's almost back to 2015 when the car first came out. We've got just so many guys that they're so strong. And the cool factor is I personally believe that next year will be even better than this year, because, you know, one of the things I keep saying is that the growth of our Indy Pro 2000 category is what is really going to feed Indy Lights in 2022. And that's one of the reasons Indy Lights has been kind of hurting for numbers, because when we transitioned to the old, from the old Pro Mazda to the new PM18 back in 2018, 2017, we only had six drivers run full-time in what was then Pro Mazda, what is now Indy Pro. There's only six drivers. And the only driver that transitioned up had the scholarship, and that was Victor Franzoni. We have 17 drivers this year in the Indy Pro 2000 category. And it's almost as tough, if not tougher, than Indy Lights right now in terms of the drivers we have there.
Rob, we've seen some sneak peeks of the Halo, and it looks very much like a Formula One Halo as opposed to the windscreen or the aero screen that we've seen in IndyCar. Any insight in the development of that and the adaptation of that being added to the cars this year?
Well, in terms of development, I really don't have any information privy to that. I know that that they worked hard on it at Dallara, and that all the engineers that I've talked to, the installation has been super easy. Drivers really, really already enjoy it. So that's really all the information I have in terms of development wise. But I know that the drivers that have driven it said it feels fantastic. I know Kirkwood had quoted that he's run, this is his third car he's run now with the Halo on it, because he ran the F3 car, the US F3 car, he ran the F Formula E car, and now this is the third one. He said literally it's no bother whatsoever driving it, and he thinks it's fantastic.
Rob, when we look at the field in the middle level, and we got to talk about just how deep this field is, because you know a lot of eyes on Indy Lights for good reason, but it seems just as wide open on the second step of the ladder.
Yeah, the crazy thing about Indy Pro 2000 is again, so many race winners, guys coming in with unbelievable pedigrees. Right? That's the key. You know, Brayden Eves, of course, last year had that big wreck. He'll be back this year with Exclusive Autosports. He's a former USF 2000 champion and won last year as well. He's teamed up with Artem Petrov. He's a multi-time winner in the Pro 2000. They're both at Exclusive Autosport. You look at the crew at Hunkos Racing as well. They've got a strong field of guys. You know, Reese Gold, obviously one of the top guys in the USF 2000 last year. Kippen Simpson, who kind of kicked his season off with a sweep of the wins in the Formula Regional America Series at Road Atlanta. He'll be doing a handful of races as well. Interesting for me, you know, you also look at the RP Motorsport team, which is back. That's the team that won the 2019 championship with Kyle Kirkwood. And they've got a couple of good drivers, right? They got Enzo Fittipaldi, who we know is strong. And one that it hasn't been officially announced, but maybe the entry list to the sprint meeting is now available in public. Anam Ahmed, who was the 2018 British Formula 3 champion, he's coming over as well to run with the program. And, man, you look at that field, and it's just equally as tough. And it's I don't know who's going to win that championship either. It's wide open. It's going to be so much easier.
Rob, as things in Europe seem to get more and more expensive for drivers trying to move their way up the Formula One ladder, it seems like the road to Indy ladder is becoming more and more of a draw to some of these drivers who are, again, at one point were trying to get to F1 and get to F2 and F3, but now it seems like Indy Lights is more of a draw. Do you think this is going to continue to be a trend, or is this kind of a blip for the moment?
No, I think it's definitely a trend. I think that, you know, the strengthening of the IndyCar program is obviously a big draw for anybody in Europe. You know, any young kart racer, I don't care if they're in Europe or they're in the U.S., you know, one of the first things they'll say is, I want to be a Formula One driver. Right? That's what I want to be. And some will say, I want to be Formula One or IndyCar, but especially if you're in Europe, right, Formula One is the thing. You want to follow in the footsteps of Lewis Hamilton or, you know, Daniel Ricciardo or whoever it may be. You know, it'd be Max Verstappen. He was only in karts a couple of years ago. So they have that dream of going to Formula One. But the key is of obviously coming up the ranks there. It's a tough place to be in Europe because there's so many, you know, of the manufacturer academies, whether it's Ferrari or Renault, whatever it may be, the Red Bull program. If you're not in one of those programs and supported there, you're going to struggle, right? Then, unlike Indy Lights and Indy Pro and USF 2000, where we have so many different teams that can win races, there's a little more of the haves and have-nots, I think, over the European program. So if you're not with a specific team, you just don't have any opportunities. So I think that's what's kind of turning things around and making people look at our program saying, hey, you know what? I can go over here. I can make that pivot on my dream and kind of change the target from Formula One to IndyCar. And if I go to the road to Indy, I'm in a program, I can win with a lot of different programs. The scholarships are there. I think everything that we have kind of lined up together is what's going to make our program get more continually attractive over the years.
Rob, one of the maybe the hotshot Americans that was overseas that is now back, Logan Sargeant, raced in F3, barely lost out on the F3 title a year ago. You know, funding has dried up to continue in the ladder to Formula One. He's back here. Latest that I had seen was that he was potentially going to sports cars. Never raced anything outside of open wheel, so was looking at prototype or GT racing. Anything about Logan Sargeant? Do you think his future is still in open wheel, potentially in IndyCar?
I do. I've had a couple of conversations with Logan here in the off season. They were seriously looking at trying to potentially get into the road to Indy this year. The budget that he has, he does still have some budget to do some racing this year. Would not be surprised if I would see him potentially in, you know, a prototype car somewhere in Europe. I would be surprised to see him potentially sample the Le Mans 24 this year. That wouldn't surprise me. But what I would also be surprised that if he doesn't end up with Andretti Autosport in Indy Lights next year. I think that he's one of the drivers who has pivoted his concept and said, hey, you know what? Formula One was where I was trying to get to. You know, maybe I don't have the budget to get all the way there, but I think IndyCar is something I could do. So I really believe I wouldn't be surprised to see him in Indy Lights next year after kind of this year.
You know, COVID-19 has the pandemic has really, you know, put a hurt on a lot of people in terms of their financing. Maybe, you know, where the family money comes from. If there's a struggle with some family money, that it could be an issue. But I think you're going to see Logan Sargeant potentially in Lights next year.
Did you think it was a matter of timing in terms of this year for Indy Lights? It was just too late to find him an open seat, particularly with Andretti?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know that he had the budget this year
gotcha.
To be able to go to Indy Lights. And again, I haven't had that deep of a conversation with himself, with Logan or his manager, to actually ask that question straight out. You know, we talked a lot about opportunities that were available. But I think this year with the budget they have, they're going to kind of expand his experience a little bit. And you mentioned sports cars. I would bet he'll run some sports cars this year. I think that's where we'll see him. Just to kind of add to that resume, right? And to see where he's going to want to be. You know, he's good friends with Devlin DeFrancesco, and we see a lot of these guys, of our guys, Kyle Kirkwood, Oliver Askew, Spencer Piggott. You know, they all end up in a prototype car at an IMSA race, whether it's the 24 or Sebring, you know, the 12-hour. I wouldn't be surprised to see Logan kind of get his name out there in that area as well.
What about our pal Josh Green, second year in USF 2000? We've had him on the podcast before, but what do you expect out of him here in his second year?
I'm a big Josh Green fan. He's a really, really great young man. I'll tell you, he's in my handful of drivers that will be instant contenders for the championship coming out of the gate. You know, he's a returning driver, not coming back with Kate Motorsports, so that could be a little bit different. But in talking to Josh, he's really, really happy with the development and the, you know, the instant connection he has with Peter Dempsey and the team over at Turn 3. He's got a great teammate in Dylan Christie, so they're going to be strong. You know, I put him in the same handful of guys that I think can win a championship, like Christian Brooks from Exclusive Auto Sports, Kiko Porto from D-Force Racing. I think he's going to be very strong with Andy. Second new driver coming back with Kate Motorsports. So those are the four returning guys. I would say, you know, are instantly thought of as championship contenders. You know, we're going to see a little different thing this coming week when, you know, Sunday, Monday, we're on track at Barber for our spring training, and we're, you know, testing is done. When they go on the clock, you know, officially, we're going to see who's fast. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens on Sunday and Monday.
Peter Dempsey, are we talking 2013 Freedom 100 winner Peter Dempsey?
That's the guy.
Awesome. Awesome.
Of course, that fantastic finish. He owns Turn 3 Motorsport. They have they started, actually, you know, a couple of years ago in Indy Pro 2000 category. He has James Rowe Jr., the Irishman. He went from Peter's team, Turn 3, in Indy Pro 2000. Then they went and bought a couple of cars to run USF 2000 this year. So they're actually going to be running in the two different series.
That's awesome. Well, it's good to see that he's still involved on some level. We talked about Logan Sargeant. Any other names that people, you know, on the IndyCar side should kind of be aware of to say, hey, this guy could come from Europe to Lights and be a name to kind of keep on your radar? You know, obviously not for this year, but maybe for next year.
Well, you know, when we're talking outside of the road to Indy right now, everything changes so much. And it all depends on which drivers, as I said, get picked up by an academy program. You know, obviously a lot of eyes are going to be on young Jack Crawford from Texas. He's going to be running a couple of series over there in Europe, but he's in the Red Bull program, so he's definitely potentially on the fast track to try to get to F1. You know, another one of the American drivers that we saw in USF 2000 with us before moving to Europe was Kalen Frederick. You know, Kalen's going to run for this year. He's moving to the FIA F3 program. And so Kalen may be a guy that could eventually come back one day. We'll see if he does, if he's not able to get to Formula One. But for me, it'll be a year where F3 is kind of the area where guys go from F3 into Indy Lights, right? Whether it's British F3 or the FIA F3, they could potentially jump to Lights. They don't normally come straight across and run in Indy Pro 2000, although they could if they wanted. So once the F3 program kind of settles in and we see which drivers are kind of up to the top, I think that more mid-pack is where we'll see guys potentially come from there to Indy Lights, because the guys who are in the top five or still have that dream, right? They still want to get to F2. Very likely they're supported by some kind of an academy if you're in that top five, you know, top echelon of F3. Otherwise, mid-pack guys maybe don't have the same budget. They're going to be able to come over and run Indy Lights like Alex Pironi is going to do this year. You know, Alex running with Carlin with us this year. He was 10th last year in FIA F3. So I think that's the kind of guy that will make that move over here because our budgets are significantly less than F2.
Rob, your bread and butter is the road to Indy, but we're going to ask you an IndyCar question because you're, you know, you're Canadian and everything. So I wanted to ask you about the potential race in Toronto in July, and maybe you can give us a better picture of the restrictions up there and how likely that event is to take place with all the COVID restrictions.
Well, you know, it's one of my favorite events, the Toronto race, and I would tell you right now that I would really wish that it was going to happen based on what's happening now up in Canada. You know, they've locked Ontario back down again. We had a third wave kind of come in over the last month, and the cases are up again, and you know, the Canadian government's been pretty aggressive on it. They're locking everything back down again, and here we are, you know, at the start of April, and we're talking about, you know, 3 months from now, the race. So I don't feel very, very confident about it, to be honest with you. I've had no contact with anybody from IndyCar. I haven't had contact with anybody from the event itself, so I don't want to make it sound like I know. It's just in where things are right now in Ontario, it'll be tough. I think, you know, Canada's been very aggressive in shutting down people coming across the border. To get back to, you know, to get into Canada now, you have to get a COVID test to fly there. If you get a COVID test when you land, then you have to stay at a hotel until you get the test back. If it's a negative test, then you're allowed to leave the hotel, and you still, with a negative test, have to quarantine for 14 days. So they're taking a very, very harsh approach to this to try to shut things down in terms of travel. And that really doesn't work when you're talking about trying to bring the IndyCar circus across the border from Toronto. So I'm not real optimistic right now, and normally I'm the king of optimism. This particular one, I'm not.
Rob, yeah, spring training next week, I'm sure, you know, you're ecstatic. What are some of the things, you know, in terms of storylines or maybe performances or just how everything shakes out? What are you going to keep an eye on next week in Alabama?
You know, for me, it's some of the unknown drivers. You know, we've seen these kids, at least I have, through karting, and drivers who, you know, are in their first year, or rather in their second year in USF 2000, or have been with us for a couple of years, are in Indy Pro 2000 up to Indy Lights. So they're more of a known commodity. It's some of the drivers that we don't know of, which I think are going to be really exciting to watch. You know, we've got a couple of drivers that came up from the Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand. They're going to come up, Billy Fraser being one. He's going to be running with Exclusive Autosport. Peter Bradanovich as well for J. Howard Driver Development. So these are guys I don't know a lot about, so they're really exciting to me. But there's a number of young drivers who have come into the program from F1600 over in Europe, you know, who are going to come and run. Dylan Christie is a kid coming up from F1600 here in America. Spike Kolbecker with Cape Motorsports ran F4 and won races in F4. He's been in Europe as well and did a full year of Europe. He also went down and did the the Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand. So there's a lot of guys that come in with a lot of experience in F1600, which I really love. And I always say this about USF 2000. It normally takes the rookie drivers half the year to really get a grip. You know, they think they can win come out of the gate. Sometimes they can. But a more probable storyline would be the simple fact that it takes them, you know, the whole year to really get a good grip. You know, they think they can win, but by the end of the season, they're like, yeah, you know what? I thought I was full of it when I got in here, but I've learned so much. that'll be the key. How fast can these rookies step up? Because, like I said before, the four veterans that are coming back are going to be able to win out of the gate. And so
it'll be interesting to see how fast Billy Frazier can be, Spike Colbeck, or some of these guys that are coming in. If they're good out of the gate, it could blow things wide open.
Rob, before we wrap up, got to ask our yearly question. Any update on a potential title sponsor replacement for the Road to Indy?
That's not something that is in place right now. I think I know that the whole team continues to look at it. You know, obviously right now, for COVID-19, it really made things tough on us. Mm-hmm. I will say this, proud of what the Anderson Promotions team did. And Dan Anderson, number one, Dan Anderson. I shouldn't say proud. Very happy about Dan Anderson, right? Because without Dan, I don't think we would have had a series last year. He invested a lot of money in this program. We did a lot of standalone events. And when you do standalone events, they are incredibly expensive. So, if we didn't have Dan in the position where he is, loving what we do and loving this program, we'd be in rough shape. So last year wasn't the good year to be going and knocking on doors, right, to try to find a title sponsor for the series. I think that's something that it'd be more plausible to happen this year with more conversations at the racetrack and potentially getting something in place. But as it is right now, we're just really thankful to have Cooper Tires on board. They keep upping their support of what we do, Chris Pantani and the group at Cooper Tires. So that's a fantastic partner. Do we want to get a title sponsor? Yeah, we do. And that's something hopefully down the line we'll be able to identify the right prospect.
All right, final question, Rob. Where in the world is Rob Howden right now?
Rob Howden's in Southern California, actually, right now, to be honest. I have my RV out here. So I'm as you guys know, I'm from Canada, but I've got so many races to cover. I'm going to be down here for about 3.5 months. I have 10 races over 15 weekends on my schedule. So I'm going to be full throttle all the way through till after Mid-Ohio in July. And then I'll be heading back home for a bit. So I'm on the road tomorrow. Actually, I leave tomorrow morning for Birmingham for the spring training event, back for a weekend. Then, as everybody else who loves IndyCar, we got Barber, and then we got St. Petersburg. So it's going to be a busy run for 3.5 months, but I'm thrilled to get back at it.
What's the one drive that Rob Howden just dreads in the RV?
No drive whatsoever.
Really?
I'm literally driven from me.
I have a tour in not many times. I love being on the road. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Great stuff. Well, Rob, thanks as always for joining us. We always look forward to our Road to Indy preview every year, and I'm sure we'll chat with you again before the end of the season. But thanks again for coming on, as always.
Guys, anytime, always available, and I really appreciate you guys taking the opportunity to cover the Road to Indy. It really is, as we all know, the future of the NTT IndyCar Series. And this is, like I say all the time, this is single A, double A, and triple A baseball. And if you're a baseball fan, you want to make sure you follow the minor leagues, and that's what the Road to Indy is. And this is where all the future stars are coming from.
Thanks to Rob Howden for joining us to discuss the Road to Indy's upcoming season. And if you like the interview, if you agree, disagree with anything, we'd love for you to reach out to us. You can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly email so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on many different podcasting platforms. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, and while you're there, do us a favor, give us a 5-star rating if you could. If you're really kind, a review, that'd be very nice.
That'd be nice of you.
You can also follow on Spotify, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, Podchaser, Google Podcasts. I think we're on TuneIn, iHeart, pretty much anywhere you find your podcasts, as they say. And also at 1380thefan.com and episodes posted on the weekends at WOWO.com. You can interact with us on social media. On Facebook, just like us at New Track Record. On Twitter, our handle is IndyCar Podcast. And you can email us as well. That email address is newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. All right, Justin, time for the mailbag, and we have a lot to get to.
Let's do it.
All right, so this actually was a week ago, but it gets to our hot button issue topic of the week.
we went down this it's one of those things with every successive day it got more and more irritating,
right? It magnified
yes.
As we've gone along,
and we see no stop to it at this point. There's been no stop.
So this from Incaptine 185. Now granted, this is from a week ago. While listening to the new podcast, again, last week's episode, about marketing, you guys had me thinking IndyCar should hire a team from RLL to take over all marketing. They continuously get sponsor after sponsor every year. It makes perfect sense. They're doing something right. That is an excellent point.
Yes, I would agree. they're not landing that big primary for the entire season, but man, they not only land sponsors, but a lot of their sponsors stick around, right?
Yeah.
From year to year to year.
Speaking of Ray Hall, so they've entered a new multi-year partnership with Fleet Cost Care, and they're adding a second race as primary sponsor for Grand Ray Hall at Texas Motor Speedway, full season associate sponsor. So they've been on the car, you know, for a couple years.
Right.
But again, expanding. And they keep working at these associate deals, and they turn them into primary deals.
Yeah, you just bring them in with a small deal, you know, associate, and then slowly build up to a primary. That's they cultivate the relationships they make. So not just getting money from them, but also really, you know, in terms of activation, they do a great job. In terms of building that rapport both ways, they do a great job. It definitely is, you know, for a team that maybe we just take for granted that they're going to have primary sponsors because they do it so well. Right? Maybe it should be one of those teams that's struggling to find primary sponsorship. But we never talk about Ray Hall like that because they always seem to have their stuff together in that realm.
All right. This from Vicky Lynn 26. She says, the only thing that's been entertaining about the iRacing is Connor Daly's Twitch. Watching the YouTube video has been pretty boring. Hoping Sebring will be decent and then we can finally get the season going in a few weeks. Yes.
Well, you've been watching Sebring.
Not really, though.
But you've been listening to Sebring, and it doesn't sound very exciting.
No, I wasn't really paying attention. I saw the start. Nothing really happened, and I went back to, you know, reading articles, doing research. You know,
look at you.
Trying to be prepared, even though I never feel prepared.
No, you never quite can.
She added, let's see, as for Indy, I am a traditionalist. That being said, if there were only 34 entries, I would say let them all in, only because of the year we've had. Any more than that, bumping happens. I understand your points about sponsors and the money spent on Indy, but I also think it's a risk they understand and take to make the show. I wasn't happy when Hinch didn't make it in either, but them's the rules at Indy. As JPM says, it is what it is, and I love it.
It's a great point because I think that's part of the allure of the Indianapolis 500 is you have to make the race before you can race the race. And it's not always guaranteed. You know, a lot of times in recent years, 10, 15 years, you entered, you were probably going to make the race, right? Or at least guaranteed a spot, but not anymore. And yeah, it is spot on in terms of they know the rules, they're signing up for this, but nobody ever wants to think that they're going to be the car that's left out or the team that's left out, right? It's always, we're going into this with the expectation that we're going to be one of the 33, and it's a little, you know, can be financially devastating when you aren't.
All right, this from R. Cole on Twitter. A must get for your Will Langhorne collection. It's an eBay link, I kid you not, to a Will Langhorne Porsche Racing Alpine Stars one-piece full-body tracksuit, 5.2 euro. The price, $1,800 for the
U.S. What?
Yeah.
It's for a race-worn suit?
Yeah. Sponsored by, it looks like, Sanitech Industries.
What series?
This looks like IMSA because there's a Michelin.
I think he was in, like, Porsche Super Cup.
Okay, it's probably that.
Which I know you're really adept on.
Yeah. You know me and my Porsche Super Cup.
Here's why I have questions. Like, did he go on eBay to find the Will Langhorne suit? Or did he know it was up there? Or is he the one putting it up for bid and is trying to push the price up?
All possibilities.
I got to tell you, $1,800 for a Will Langhorne race-worn suit seems a little ridiculous.
Steep, right? Right? I mean, I would understand if it was like a, I don't know, I'm trying to think, a Scott Sharp suit, you know?
Yeah, give me a Patron suit. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because if you hang it up, the first question is like, who's Will Langhorne? Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's a Converse.
Every
starter,
time
I
we
guess.
Say Will Langhorne, I think Einhorn and Ace Ventura.
Einhorn and Finkel?
Yes.
Lois
right.
Einhorn? Well, let's
Einhorn
hope
is
Will
Finkel.
Langhorne
Finkel
is not
Einhorn.
in disguise like Lois Einhorn was.
All right. Let's see what else we got here on the mailbag. Scrolling. We got like so many. Here we go. Another one from Arcole. This is funny. He found this. Only a legend like Tony Kanaan can pull this off, IndyCar podcast. I'm actually more excited for this than the IndyCar iRacing Challenge. TK can play Farming Simulator next. It's Euro Truck Simulator 2. And it's like he photoshopped his face on like a dude wearing a flannel shirt unbuttoned with like a white t-shirt underneath.
Very nice.
Thought that was pretty great. All right. Now we're getting into the weeds. You ready?
Yeah,
ready
let's for go the real into the weeds.
All right. So you posted several times about, you know, well, today is April 1st as we record. And that's not an April Fool's joke. It actually
it
is
actually
April 1st.
It actually is, yeah.
And we're thinking and we're talking all week about, you know, well, hopefully come April 1st, they'll do a bunch of, you know, social media push for IndyCar and the new season. And hey, it's finally race month, blah, 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 blah. Outside of IndyCar retweeting a Team Penske tweet saying that it's finally IndyCar race month, and then a couple of replies like from an IndyCar and NBC tweet, and you know, there's really no new graphics, there's no real activation.
There's nothing.
I haven't seen anything on Facebook. Granted, I haven't really looked that hard on Facebook, but I would doing it on Twitter, they're not really
doing
Facebook.
It on Facebook either. I mean,
or Instagram.
The whole genesis of this issue, and it's kind of gotten legs on with our social media, and our friends at Pit Lane Parlay have kind of addressed it as mm-hmm. well, is where's the promotion for this series?
We've been talking all off season, well, not all off season, but within the last month, how it just felt like there was zero buzz for
there's
this upcoming
just nothing.
Season.
And meanwhile, there's just, you know, what the frustrating thing is for me, and maybe I'm different from everyone else, is there is discussion. There is hype for the Indianapolis 500. There is effort going into already laying the seeds, right? We're going into April and in May. And May 1, you know, social media is going to be lit up with people saying it's,
even though
it's May and
we
all
have
that
a
stuff.
Race on May 1.
Right. It's just it's and so many people whine about, well, it just feels like a series, it's the Indy 500 and everything else. And the series wants to grow its other events. And we've heard Roger Penske say that, you know, since he's taken over, that he wants to make every IndyCar event a marquee event, not just the 500. Yet here we are, and there's just nothing. We are 17 days from race day to start the season off, and there is just nothing. There's no countdown. There's, you know, here's what I got, this a piece of paper right here, Caleb.
Okay.
Five things I wrote down. This is just off the top of my head. This is a guy that's mediocre at best in the digital marketing industry. This is just me spitballing things.
Whoa.
What?
For your business account, you do an excellent job.
Well,
I mean, on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Thank you. But let me tell you, I'm completely out of my element. You put me in Instagram, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
But
really.
It's working. You guys have a lot of followers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, you know, I fake it. You know, pretty much I can fake it. But in terms of getting into the weeds, in terms of people saying, okay, TikTok's the next big thing or Twitch or whatever, I don't know how to operate those things. But
same.
The basics, the big three, you know, if we want to say Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, I know enough to be dangerous. I'm just spitballing. 2021 marketing for IndyCar, what they could be doing right now or in March or going forward, because we have less than 3 weeks. We talked about that April 1st countdown. Starting today, you count down, you know, today's 17 days, 16 days, all the way down. You could do it 30 days out. We're seeing IMS do it with the 500.
Yeah, they did it 100 days out.
Yeah, right?
And I mean, every day, they're on the 59th one.
Yeah, it was Bobby
Unser
today, wasn't
it? Yeah, I think it's Bobby.
Yeah, so every day is something with IMS, right? There's nothing on IndyCar. No sorts of countdown, not even a huge number to let people know just how many days until Barber. That's simple to me. What about a livery contest? Everybody's putting their liveries out. What if you did some sort of voting for the top livery going into 2021? Or you could just do a Barber, because everybody kind of rotates liveries, right? It's not just one throughout. Everybody has an opinion on liveries. Everybody loves the liveries when they come out. Why don't you just get some buzz at showing these cars? Because it also helps
like
people.
A livery bracket.
Like a livery bracket. It would fit in with March Madness, right? It would have fit in perfectly with a livery bracket, because what's going to happen when we get to Barber, right? I don't know what these drivers are driving. They're in different colors. This driver is in a different color. I'm used to this driver in this color. Livery contest across your social media platforms could at least help alleviate some of those questions. Livery contest, do it. Social media takeovers, those are kind of the old standby where you give Alexander Rossi or James Hinchcliffe control of social media for an afternoon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Instagram is really popular with that if you do like live type chat type things. Haven't seen any of that. I feel like that's low hanging fruit. You could do that, but they're not doing that. And don't get me because of COVID, you know, distance, they could do it from home, right?
Yeah. They could just sign into the account and do it.
have you seen anything regarding like a 1 minute or a 90 second video with the complete schedule laid out? Like we used to get even a couple years ago when they would announce the schedule or we would get close to the season and they would, it was always something that I sent my dad because he always asked, you know, when's the racing start and where are they going to be at? And that was a good, hey, watch this 2 minute video.
Not really. Like, I mean, besides probably the original schedule announcement last fall,
which I don't think ever had a video, like a real hype video. I don't remember that. I don't see it on IndyCar's YouTube when I looked at it. Like, that's simple stuff. Like, coming out starting April 18th, the Barber, then we go to St. Pete and all this stuff. I can just go through the schedule, especially now that you know what channel they're going to be on, what broadcast channel they're going to be on, and times. Right? And it's just one of those, you know, those hype video things. You know, the Reds had one today before they got beat up by the Cardinals. So optimism was high. You watch that 75-second video and you think the Reds are going to go 162-0. But at least it gives that blood flowing, right? Nothing. So that's number four. How about a fresh look or a fresh update for the app? And maybe that's coming over the next couple weeks.
I would hope. Fingers crossed that's coming. But yes, that needs to be done.
Yeah, we still have a different breed, which was like the slogan for like 2.5 weeks. And then it was just completely disappeared. And I thought that the premise was decent if they ran with it, but they never did. It was just like, here we are. And then 2.5 weeks, it was gone. But the app I got on with you, Caleb, yesterday and signed in, and I had an alert come up at the bottom that race two was it? Sebring? Or was that today?
Today was Sebring.
What was one?
Montreal.
So yeah, I swear it said race two. Race two at Montreal starting in 30 minutes for iRacing. That was the alert I got at the bottom. A, it wasn't race two, it was race one. And obviously that was weeks ago. And so, like, it's the basics here. What about the details of what's going to be on Peacock? We have no freaking idea.
Well, there's something that Indy 44 saw that was up briefly on Peacock, and then apparently he tweeted hours later that it was taken down. So we've had no Peacock announcement. We've had no app, you know, refresh announcement.
Nothing.
And that this is after the content days, too, that they had a couple weeks ago.
Right. And, you know, the Peacock thing is just particularly annoying because, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be on Peacock, but is it just going to pop up the day of? What are we getting? Is it going to be a special rate where if we sign up for 6 months of Peacock, we get a discount or something like that? Come first practice, is everything going to work? Because their IndyCar is notorious, you know, even when it was just free on YouTube, that they had issues, right? So if I'm paying for something, I want to make sure that it's halfway decent. It's just, you know, even putting content on Peacock now to kind of hype people up. Hey, IndyCar is coming 2-3 weeks away. Here are old races that NBC has rights to that are on Peacock that you can watch. Maybe they show, you know, maybe they profile that, you know, the race last year or 2 years ago, Barber or something. I don't know. I mean, this is just me spitballing over 2 minutes during a commercial break on the show before. That they could be doing, and they're not doing any of it.
The buzz has been the Facebook, you know, race replays where they've been trolling fans, you know, with the US 596.
Right.
And Danica's first win, and I think there was another one, too, that they did.
I mean, that's great.
Oh, 2002 Indy 500.
Yeah, I mean, that's great for the off season, but this is when you're really supposed to be ramping up the excitement and the momentum going into the season, right? I mean, there's nothing. It's all focused on the Indianapolis 500. And you and I were talking about it in terms of marketing and production. I mean, is an issue the fact that IMS Productions is such a huge part of IndyCar's marketing and communications empire that it's focusing on in-house first? Like, IMS is going to take care of IMS, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, my marketing idea, and this is not going to go over well with a lot of people, but if you really want to fix the problem that we have with the series and the tie-in with the Indy 500, well, have the series and the Speedway be separate entities, and actually separate entities.
What?
Owned by separate entities. Right. Kind of like, well, you know, CART, you know, before we had the owners infighting and Tony George and blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
that's the only way in my book that I see this problem ever going away.
I mean, at the very least, they could be two different entities under the same umbrella, because Roger Penske has his media or his business empire has so many different facets and pieces and parts, that why can't they be two different, right? We know why. It's because they need IMS money to supplement IndyCar. IndyCar, as far as we know, is still not fiscally responsible to the point that it can be operated independently without a loss. But yeah, to your point, Caleb, separate entities, separate marketing budgets, and separate goals. Because I feel like the goal of IndyCar right now is to promote the Indianapolis 500. And then they're going to whine when nobody else knows that there are other races. I mean, Fox promoted the crap out of the Daytona 500. And yes, that's their jewel. That's their Indianapolis 500. But it's also the start of the race, the start of the season. You know, I have to think that they would be marketing the start of their season, maybe not as much, but somewhat during the NFL, if it wasn't the Daytona 500. There's nothing out there, and I don't understand it. I you know, what are you waiting for? Because then, you know, the season's going to start, and how many people are going to go, well, I didn't know the season started, or wow, when did this happen, or that happen, or whatever. It's just, there's nothing. And if they're waiting, it's almost too late. Like, this can't be a 1 week thing. This can't be a 2 week thing. You know, I went back and counted. They tweeted more direct tweets, so no retweets or responses. More tweets, double the amount of tweets over the past week about iRacing.
This is before tonight's race.
Before
the tweet that just says, "Hey, tune in now."
Yes, double the amount of tweets about iRacing than they did about anything involving the start of the season.
And when at the start of the iRacing event, it was like, I know, like 600 and some people watching on YouTube.
Yeah, they're really
so
bringing
you throw
in the
that
masses,
in with,
right?
With what they have the YouTube link on IndyCar.com and the iRacing site. They have the YouTube page. They have it on Facebook. Correct?
Yeah, you can. Okay. Yeah, it's live. On
so
Facebook.
I mean, what across all the platforms watching live? I mean, what?
Yeah, come on,
2,000 people.
Yeah, why even?
Well, in the time for that, I've never understood the 6:30 Eastern time.
It's, when everybody's eating dinner?
Yeah, to me, it's like go at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and reach more people. And, you know, if they're literally catering the time just to get some of the guys who are overseas, like, to me, that's not good enough.
Yeah, it's just, it's completely backward. I don't understand what the game plan is. And, you know, they just had a recent new director of communications, I want to say, a couple years back, correct?
Yeah, Dave First just took over, what, last year?
I mean, and marketing? I don't know if I want to blame communications.
I know they made new hires with the digital side. In fact, someone on Twitter that I saw like got one of the digital content type jobs.
And yeah.
I don't even know if they've started yet, because they like just announced this, I think, like early this week or something.
Right.
So I don't even know if they're in the job yet. So that might be part of the problem, but it's concerning, I guess, is where I'm at. I'm not in the let's blast them, they're doing a terrible, terrible job. It's more of like the season's starting in a couple of weeks. Like,
yeah, like
we're concerned
the hype?
That
and the things that I mentioned and you've mentioned, Kate, they're not difficult to do.
Your ideas I thought were excellent, because I'll be honest, I don't really have good ideas. I mean, my my idea for marketing is, well, it's always going to be this way until the series and the Speedway are separate, complete separate entities under different ownership, because it's just always going to be a problem, because they're always going to promote
right.
The big race, because the big race helps cover the rest of the series.
And yeah, and maybe people listening are saying, well, yeah, of course they need to promote the Indianapolis 500 because it does pay for everything else. And I understand that, but maybe that's part of the problem is, you know, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. Does the Indy 500 pay for everything else because nothing else can make money? Or is it because they don't promote it? and then it doesn't make money?
Great, great questions.
So I just feel like this is a problem in IndyCar, and it's always been a problem. But I think we felt like when Roger Penske came on board, all the problems were going to be solved, which is not realistic, but it just made us feel good to think that. But I think this is something you can zero in and say, despite Roger Penske owning everything, this is still a major problem. I don't know if it's the wrong people in the wrong positions. I don't know if it's just lack of effort. Maybe it's just too much focus on the 500. I don't know. But I felt like potentially IndyCar could have redeemed itself today, April 1st, by just coming out and blasting social media that, just like Team Penske did today. What, you know, all it was, hey, we go IndyCar racing this month or something like that with a gif of Joseph Newgarden, right?
Yep.
Even something like that, like recognizing the fact that we're finally in April and the season starts this month. There's nothing. There was a lazy retweet, is what it was. And meanwhile, there is plenty of iRacing coverage that nobody cares about. And I know, okay, 600 people were watching, 1,000, 2,000. That, to me, is nobody. That's not enough people to care to put the effort in that they're putting in.
Well, and again, I've argued the iRacing series should have been in January or February.
Yeah, that would have been prime time for it.
Do it right after the Super Bowl or something.
Right. And, you know, you're looking at some of these initiatives on the IMS side, like their weekly series online. We've talked about that a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. Caleb. They're phenomenal. They're great. But it's just so focused on an IndyCar, and it's just completely, there's complacency regarding everything else. And then we're going to show up in Barber, and people are going to be like, holy crap, IndyCar started. There's just no
hey, at least it's marketing. Not competing with the Masters this year.
Yeah, right?
Barber usually, on many years, competes with the Masters, which just it makes for brutal TV ratings.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some tweets on this marketing kind of question, and I will just run through these. Elite Flight says, you're expecting a lot from a series that does absolutely nothing in marketing and promotion. Poet Shevchenko, I've got a partial answer. Indy 44 saw two sessions of the preseason test listed on Peacock TV next weekend. And then, yeah, that's what we replied to, saying that apparently they took that down later. So that's part of the issue there. Let's see. Who else do we have? Jeremy from HBG. Judging from what I'm hearing about the WWE rollout on Peacock, whatever happens might be an excrement show. So that's the early responses. Then we continued on with some more tweets. Later on, Jeremy from HBG saying, on the plus side, it looks like they've been spamming me about a bunch of sports I do not watch on the email I use for streaming services. So once they roll this out, sounds like everyone's going to know. But again, I'm not sure why it hasn't been rolled out yet. And that's the concerning part at the moment. More tweets on this on, you know, this is in regards to that Team Penske tweet. You know, we're finally getting something. Nick J. Fletcher says, dozens of fans just heard the plug for Barber right before the start of the iRacing event. Yeah, they did plug it. I'm sure most people watching this event on the IndyCar YouTube channel were not sure of when the real season started, so that seems like a good target audience. NK Harden, remember back in October when we said, hey, at least the off season won't be as long as it is most years. That was funny.
Yeah.
Right? I remember that. We were so naive then. Nick J. Fletcher adding, maybe they've just bought a bunch of those weird billboard trucks and are driving them around empty downtown areas all over the country. Or just missing them. Seems like a very IndyCar marketing approach in 2021.
No, they would probably be driving around, you know, Milwaukee and Michigan.
Cleveland.
Yeah, they're going Fontana. Up and down the tarmac at the airport. Just, you know.
Poet Shevchenko says, this is going to be a juicy rant, I can tell. throwing something on the wall, but IndyCar should buy sponsorships of 10 to 20 popular YouTubers.
My son watches YouTubers.
Yeah, that stuff works. It's not I'm not the target demo. But again, we're not the target demo.
There's plenty of stuff younger. My son knows that he wouldn't have learned it via like just pop culture and stuff that's, I mean, he knows who Lewis Hamilton is basically because of commercials that pop up on YouTube.
That's
the only reason he knows who Lewis Hamilton is. That and every time he walks in and he asks who's winning, Lewis Hamilton's winning.
Lewis Hamilton's winning. Mike Joachim, Mike _ JOAC, one of our friends from Pit Lane Parlay, says, don't even get me started with a frown face emoji.
Yeah, I feel like our friends at Pit Lane Parlay have gone down this rabbit hole as well and coming up with the same, you know, conclusions as us, that it's miserable execution.
Does it seem new this offseason, too? Like, I don't remember it being like this in the past.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe it's just because I feel like I'd have paid attention just as much, but it was kind of surprising that this year, particularly after the year we're coming off of, is there would be more excitement for the start of the season. And then there are plenty of buzz in the paddock and storylines to be had. And I'm not talking about previews. And maybe this is a problem. I think IndyCar looks at what they are as another media entity. Because you go to IndyCar.com and it is full of fluffy, feel-good, cookie-cutter stories. I mean, how many people go to IndyCar for their IndyCar news? Not very many. How many people go to IndyCar, period, outside of looking at who's leading the points or whatever? That's
yeah,
all
race,
I use.
Box
in
scores.
I mean,
that's pretty much.
Seriously, but they treat themselves like a media entity. And maybe that's partially because you have former media people in those positions. The biggest thing that I had going from journalism into PR and marketing and communications was taking yourself out of that news reporting realm. Is you're not reporting news anymore. You're providing a service. You're providing information. And you have to provide also some initiative and a reasoning for people to pay attention to your product. And I just don't feel like IndyCar right now does that. I feel like they come in and say, okay, we're going to go tell this story about RC Enerson, and we're going to go tell this story and that story. And you don't have to do that. You're not a media entity. You have other market or other entities to do that. And so I think that's their priority instead of, you know, activation, instead of digital marketing and really getting involved. They focus so much on these younger generations of fans, and they just don't know how to reach them.
This from Bean's B-Card blog on Twitter. I don't understand IndyCar's horrible marketing. We're in an age where it doesn't have to be paid print, TV, or radio. It's all crickets, though. That dovetails perfectly to what you just said, basically.
Right.
Drunk at Indy tweeted us saying, unfortunately, IndyCar's social channels are just not very good. And Vin Designs 2013 responded, that's probably an understatement. We could find any drunk fan of the track to do better. That would be fun, actually.
Yeah, I'm down. I mean, we could find plenty of good personalities at the track for sure in the month of May.
So that wraps up the mailbag. We'd love for you to send us your thoughts on marketing and Justin's ideas, my idea of it's always going to be this way until the series and Speedway are separate, complete separate entities under different ownership. I know that's extreme, but that's literally how I feel.
No,
like I feel like it will always be that way until it is split up.
And that's the problem. We've reached a point where Caleb feels the only way this changes, the only way it gets better, the only way something happens to actually move the needle in terms of digital marketing is completely breaking apart the Speedway from the series. That's what we've reached. That's the point that Caleb has reached. That's bad.
But I mean, can you blame me for thinking
no,
that?
No. But that's the depths of how far this thing goes. This is how long this has been an issue. Is your now only solution is something drastic, and you know you're not wrong at this point.
And I'm not saying that they need to split up for this one particular thing, but I'm just saying it will continue to be this way until that ever happens, if it ever happens again, which I don't see how it will unless the series can be, you know, profitable and successful on its own, separate from the Indy 500, which has not been the case since the IRL was formed in 1996.
Right, and I just it just it flummoxes me every time, every day. And I don't make it a point to go to IndyCar, at IndyCar, or any of their social media platforms. It's just when this comes up, I feel like, hey, let's just take a look. And it's amazing to me, the lack of activation, the lack of excitement building, even attempting to do something. Just be on the radar, you know, be in people's mind, be annoying, be pester, you know, be that that count on people's timelines, like, man, like, they just keep going and going and going. Only rare will you run into a case where somebody will actually unfollow you or something for that. And as long as you're giving quality content, unless you're really engaging people, it doesn't matter how much or how little you send out. But it's just, there's none for IndyCar right now. There's absolutely none. But, I mean, thankfully we have iRacing, because then they may have to get drastic and actually talk about the upcoming season. So, thank God we have fake racing.
Speaking of quality content, thanks to all the haters, because we're apparently, our company deems this as quality content, which is kind of funny, but also kind of awesome. I mean, do we get into that?
Sure. Sure.
You're like that. we're an award-winning podcast, so you're listening to an award-winning podcast. I know it's hard to believe, but this is who we are now.
Right here.
Yeah.
Looking at it.
Federated Media 2020 Podcast of the Year. So again, as someone joked on a text thread with some friends, they joked, well, you know, it was award-winning until they found out about the bagged milk episode. I said, no, that's 2021 episode, so that does not apply
for that one
to this award.
My question was, how many podcasts are there? I felt like, is there like two or three? But you said there's a lot of them.
No, there are dozens. I mean, we got all our stations in Fort Wayne and South Bend.
Sure, we'll take it.
There, I don't know, probably two or three dozen, 25, 30 podcasts,
nice.
I'm guessing. I don't know.
So we'll take it, and you'll be able to spot me at Indy in May, because I'm duct taping this to the front of my car.
It'll be your car hood ornament.
That'll be my hood ornament.
Who needs the silver arrows when you can have this award?
What did they say? Like the amethyst? Is that?
I guess. Yeah. It's actually very
it's
nice.
It's actually pretty snazzy.
We're not making fun of the award. The award.
No,
is
not at all.
Very nice. We may have to post it on the socials or something.
Yeah, but shockingly, folks, you are listening to an award-winning podcast.
So anyway, enough tooting our own horn.
Well, the quality has gone downhill significantly in 2021, but you could say we were in our prime in 2020.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's transition to other award-winning things, like a couple of rumors from Robin Miller's Racer.com mailbag. He says, I've heard J.R. Hildebrand in a fourth car, but don't know anything about a sponsor. Also on Connor Daly and Carlin, nothing official, but Connor has given Trevor his best results, so you all think he'll be in the car again. And speaking of drivers, they had testing at Texas this week. 17 cars the first day, but then there are 7 the next day. I'm not sure as far as the crossover on stuff, but essentially, that PJ1 is going to be a problem yet again.
Yeah, the PBJ is going to be a big problem, big shock. It's not good.
And let's see if I can pull up the.
But they just said, because they only put it on turns 1 and 2,
correct,
last year,
yeah,
right?
Joey Barnes 85 had some takeaways from the test. The dark lane turns 1 and 2. It's from the PJ1, or Justin calls it PBJ, is still a no-go zone. Optimism among some, it can improve with increased downforce and cooler temps for the May races. Which,
I mean,
temperatures?
Cooler temps. It was chilly there.
Well, I know, but it'll be a lot cooler in May compared to June when this race normally runs.
Well, what I'm talking is the test. I thought they were referring to the test and say cooler temperatures. It's not going to be any cooler than what it was when they were turning laps.
No.
At the test, so I don't know what they're talking about. Cooler temperatures. If anything, it's going to be worse than what it was. During the test, right?
As far as the temperatures, yeah, it'll be a lot warmer. But
yeah, which makes the PBJ even slicker, I would imagine.
Yeah, Pato Award, all this from Joey Barnes. Pato Award said he tried it and couldn't think of a better word than cojones when describing the commitment level to going up there. Also, teams kind of deciding on whether to bring their 8,500 cars to Texas. Some will, some won't. It's a month away. Conditions could be somewhat similar. 17 teams here. That's a lot for a private test.
Well, 17 cars.
Sorry. 17 cars. And then also with that, on, again, April 1st, not a joke, but Cody Ware and Pietro Fittipaldi did a test for Dale Coyne Racing. They stayed over, and this is Cody Ware's second test. I would think he might be the candidate for the, is it the 52 car that still doesn't have a driver for the 500 and ovals? And he is also set to test at Indy IMS next week, he said on Twitter. So sounds like that will be the driver of the 52 car.
Yeah. I've already given my opinion on Cody Ware. I mean, you know,
we can move on from
there. I roll until he proves me wrong, but come on.
And this news coming in as we're recording, Adam Stern, Sports Business Journal, Sports Business Daily, reporting that IndyCar has secured a batch of Pfizer vaccines for members of its industry next Friday. So what is that, April 8th? Right?
Yes.
Nope, sorry, it's 9th. 9th. Day ahead. Next Friday, team owners, staffers, drivers, and other industry partners will be able to get the first dose of the vaccine for free at IMS. And again, they're doing that vaccine clinic at IMS all April long. So if you're anywhere close to Indy and want to do the one-shot Johnson & Johnson, you can sign up at rshot.in.gov, and boom, you're done. So that is ideal, but good to see that the series is doing this. Unfortunately, they won't be able to get the second shot for the Pfizer vaccine, you know, until after the races start.
Right.
So Paddock will be closed, which we expect that anyway, but that's kind of where we stand on that for now. Also, Sports Business Journal, Adam Stern with an article that I saw last week, and a pro tip to everyone, you know how the articles always seem like they're, you know, locked for access?
Yeah.
You can actually sign in for free with your email address. Just sign in with your email and then create a password. Then you have an account. You can actually view the article for free.
I thought you had to like pay for it.
So I've been able to view this article. Penske seeks increase in IndyCar's next media rights deal. So there are a couple fascinating things in this read. This article came out late last week.
Okay.
Sources say that the structure of the current deal sees NBC pay out a rights fee to IndyCar in the range of $20 million annually.
Really?
Previously unreported figure. We all assumed it was, what, 5 to 10?
5 to 10? That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Now, here's where it changes. But IndyCar then helps subsidize production. That drops the net revenue by an amount that is likely well into millions of dollars.
Okay.
Prior to 19, of course, IndyCar split between ABC and NBC. Also, Adam says Penske bought the series from the Holman George family for around $300 million in late 2019, just before the pandemic started. Stern says, unknown who is interested as far as bidders other than NBC, but they have agreed to start discussing a possible renewal in late April with NBC, according to Mark Miles. They told SBJ that. So, again, discussions really haven't kicked into gear. What a terrible pun, but...
I feel like, I don't know. I think it just feels like a formality at this point to get an extension with NBC.
I would think so. Also in the article, unclear if Penske wants an outright increase in the rights fee or just wants the series to have to stop subsidizing production, which again would boost value of the deal, as Stern reported earlier, by millions of dollars. I think that's the route they will go.
I feel like, but they're not in a position of power, of negotiating power after 2020 with, you know, obviously with the Indianapolis 500 with low...
True, but other races had increases.
Yeah, but it's still, I'm sure it ended up as a net loss in terms of people tuning in. So not the best position to be asking for more money, but if there's anybody that can pull it off in a boardroom, it's Roger Penske.
Other thing of note, IndyCar is moving in-house for its media strategizing. The previous deal they used with... I don't know how to pronounce this, Bevilacqua Helfand Ventures on its last media rights deal. So basically,
think
of this
like
a search firm. So IndyCar is negotiating in-house. But again, that saves money. And with the new administration, if you will, it makes sense to do what they did.
I feel like Penske has people that can do that. Yes,
exactly. So Penske Entertainment Corp, you would hope they can do something like that in-house, because that is essentially the part of Penske that runs the Speedway and the series is Penske Entertainment. So you would hope they would be able to have media rights negotiators and everything on board for that. So then Stern says NBC has reason to renew. You know, of course, they have NASCAR. However, the NFL rights, that is going up significantly for its deal on NBC with Sunday Night Football. So that's something to... keep in mind.
I just feel like for the hundreds of millions of dollars that NBC is surely paying for Sunday Night Football, what's $10 million or 15?
I don't right? know. I mean, oh, I agree.
It's not my money, so, you know, but still, like, you're forking over a crap ton of money for NFL. And so I feel like it's, I just don't think it hits the bank as much, right? But that's me.
Yeah. While we're at it talking TV stuff, side note, Stern reporting ESPN2, 0.53 rating, 879,000 viewers.
How about that?
The season opener for Bahrain for F1. Most watched live F1 race ever on that channel dating back to 1995, higher than all F1 races run last year. That's incredible.
Now, it helps that it did not start at the crack of dawn.
Yeah,
it was like at 11 a.m.
11 a.m. Eastern.
11 a.m. lights out. But ESPN2,
less
pretty
homes
impressive.
Yeah. than ESPN.
So very impressive in what turned out to be an exciting finish.
Yeah, I wouldn't say an exciting race.
No,
I would
neither.
Say an exciting finish.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were throwing around a thrilling race at Bahrain.
No.
It was not a thrilling race.
It was a
race.
Thrilling five laps.
I fell asleep.
Same.
During the most part. I mean, the first 5-10 laps, okay. Then I got a good snooze in and then woke me up for the final 5-10 laps.
All right, you ready for one of our favorite topics?
Third OEM?
Yes.
Let's see what kind of non-news we have this week.
All right, this is from AutoWeek.com's Jerry Bonkowski. IndyCar hybrid era could be magnet that finally attracts third manufacturer. So that is the headline for the article.
And it's the same quotes from the same people, I'm going to imagine.
Yep, yeah, Jay Fry talking about, you know, attracting that third OEM, and we worked really hard this offseason on the Speedway program. So we did a test at IMS last fall. We have a four-car test at IMS this weekend. That was last week, where we're going to look at a little push to pass hybrid system, how this could work down the road. So it's kind of more of a future type thing. Okay.
Well,
that's great. Not really seeing anything. Oh, and then we have 30 cars reportedly coming to IMS for the IndyCar open test next week. That's a quote from Jay Fry. Over 30 cars coming.
And I've heard that half will drive one way and half will drive the other way.
April Fools.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same track, just turning right instead of left. But, okay, that's an on story to me. Wake me up when there's something substantial happens. It was an interesting start to the testing era for this new system because, you know, the drivers weren't too happy about these push to pass in the ovals. And quite frankly, I don't understand why you even need it at IMS. I don't know if it's going to be a true push to pass or they're just trying to simulate the extra horsepower type thing. But it sounded like it was, you know, a car's normally on rails anyway at IMS. But when you have a significant boost of power, it can be even more hair-raising from what it sounded like from the drivers. So it didn't sound very positive, at least in the initial returns.
Also, this article, I'm reading more quotes, and it's just a lot of, we hope this, we hope that.
It's like, the same stuff we've heard for years.
Yeah. Nothing really new here.
I mean, it's just meeting that byline count.
Got you a click. Congrats, AutoWeek.
You got duped.
I'm a sucker. All right, let's talk about something fun that's actually happening.
Just protect your current two OEMs.
Yes.
Make them happy, and if that lures in another one, great. But focus on Chevy and Honda. Go on, Caleb.
So new liveries, a lot coming out. Sonax, again, primary sponsor for Rinus VK. I feel like that car is an upgrade over last year.
I would agree.
Also, Connor Daly, the B-2 bomber-inspired U.S. Air Force livery.
That is the coolest thing I've seen. And the
really?
Reveal, the unveil. Like,
oh, yeah.
The livery is one
bomber.
Thing.
The livery's, it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah,
I feel like I liked,
okay, but
I liked his 2019 one with the shark teeth. That's been
one
of my
the
favorites.
Old, yeah, the old, you know, it was... the old World War II model, Flying Tigers.
Yes.
Was that what that was? But, you know, the car parked in front of the B-2 and the video. Like, that is just cool to me. That was awesome.
Dare we say activation?
Yeah. That was awesome. And to be able to, I mean, I believe B-2 bombers are only based at one or two air bases in the country. I think they're in Missouri or something like that. So it's a haul to get out there. First of all, they're not flying one to you. You're having to go out there. So I thought that was awesome. That was cool. And, you know, just the B-2 is an awesome airplane. You could park it in front of a trailer park, and it would make trailer park look awesome. So it was pretty cool. And like you said, Caleb, awesome activation, awesome partner. That was cool.
We also got a primary sponsor for the Pareto Autosport number 16, driven by Simona DiSilvestro. Again, they're partnered with Team Penske. Rocket Pro TPO, that's part of Rocket Mortgage, a.k.a. Quicken Loans, which I know that's apparently a bad word. You can't say Quicken Loans anymore.
Why?
I don't know, but that's they rebranded as Rocket Mortgage.
Is it
something? It's the same company.
Huh, really?
Yeah. Anyway, so they had Moneyline as the associate, which that's a sponsor for Penske's Cup side, but now we have Rocket Pro TPO as the sponsor, red and white. Car looks clean. I don't know. It doesn't jump out at me personally, but it does look pretty clean. And it's good that they have their primary sponsor announced. Yeah. So Rocket Pro TPO works directly with independent mortgage brokers. Adds to Pareto's recent announcement of financial services company Moneyline joining the program as an associate sponsor. That's from Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com.
Hey, primary sponsor, that's a good thing.
Scott McLaughlin.
Yellow Submarine?
Yellow Submarine, the Pennzoil car. There are pictures and video of it. He also is wearing the helmet that just says Scott on it, you know, with the... yellow and red. It looks so good.
Yeah.
No surprise. Joseph Newgarden, the Shell Fuel Rewards car. And I have to say, I prefer the red and white and yellow Shell car. This is mostly black and white with just the Shell logo
right
on the side pod. It in a way, it kind of harkens back to the Brian Herta Shell car.
Yeah,
back
yeah.
in CART, you know, the black
right.
and white. With hint of yellow, but it not quite. Like, it's not quite there.
Not quite there. Huh?
Personally. I don't know. That's how I feel. And then, Romain Grosjean's car. Same sponsor as the Rick Ware Racing Cup cars with that Nurtec ODT. It's like for migraine headaches, I believe. So that is the primary sponsor. And then you have Jacob Construction. You have Valpak, which are also sponsors on Vassar Sullivan car for Dale Coyne Racing of Ed Jones. Mind Maze, which is a... Romain Grosjean personal sponsor. I might be missing one or two others as far as the sponsors go, but those are kind of the main ones. Purple car, this will stick out. You're not going to miss it. I think it's fine. I don't know. I don't hate it. I don't like love it, but that's kind of where we're at. What are your thoughts
on it? It's pretty much like 2021. You don't love it. You don't hate it.
Yeah, kinda. It exists.
You know, the Yellow Submarine has become almost, I mean, it's, it doesn't excite me anymore. I don't want it to go away because it's such an iconic livery. But, you know, I still think it's going to be tough to beat Conrad Ailey's new one and Sebastian Bourdais, to be honest. I mean, I like the sleek, the clean black look.
Yeah.
Looks a little sinister. And the way Sebastian Bourdais drives, I think... you know, he could live up to that livery in terms of being, you know, really, really sneaky and really, really tough on the track.
James Hinchcliffe livery also unveiled. Not that this is a surprise. We saw it before. At least this is the Genesis livery. Kind of reminds me of Charlie Kimball's first year IndyCar, you know, in 2011.
Yeah.
Same kind of colors. Kind of reminds me of that. Looks good, though. I don't know. I think my favorite is still the McLaughlin PPG car. I think that is one of my favorites.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do like the Bourdais one as well, like you said. When we're looking at, you know, favorite liveries, you know, it would have been great to do a livery, you know, bracket, like you said earlier in the show, but...
You know, just one of those
things. Late to the game. Late to the game. Speaking of F1 guys in IndyCar, did you see there's an article with Kevin Magnussen talking about him trying to get to IndyCar? This from inews.co.uk, so I'm not sure how...
So it's a UK source?
Yeah, not sure how quality of a source that is because, you know, they have a lot of odd sources of that nature. Kevin Magnussen, I got bored racing in the back in F1, but I'm not bored anymore.
Nice.
And he talked about IndyCar and, you know, trying to get to IndyCar.
I think he's there in 2022.
I do too. Basically, he said it's not realistic to say that I'll get back. That's to F1. And then he said IndyCar was the obvious thing to go and do, but IndyCar seems to run drivers with sponsorships. They need the driver to come with the sponsors, and I didn't have them, so I was left without a drive at all. I think he'll be in IndyCar next year with Ganassi. I really do.
I have a hard time thinking that Kevin Magnussen's coming to the table with zero money.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he has some money.
Yeah.
But I don't think he could close the gap.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I feel like he's with Chip. You have all eyes on Alex Palou. We've been over this before.
Yep. And you have all eyes on Ericsson,
right? I have all eyes on Marcus Ericsson. I think a former Formula One driver replaces another former Formula One driver.
Yeah, I think we'll see him in 2022. Like, I just think that's... I'm not going to say a lock.
It makes too much sense.
Right? It does. It really does. All right, let's see what else. A couple of race ticket announcements. WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca announcing that 2021 season tickets are on sale. You can check out their ticket packages. I looked through their site, and they got 1, 2, and 3-day tickets for the IndyCar race. So everything looks set for that. Also, St. Pete single-day Firestone GP tickets on sale as well. GPSTPete.com/tickets. Also, I have 3 tickets for sale. Contact me. Just send me a DM on Twitter or something. Please contact me. I'm trying to unload these. I can't go. So please, I will cut you a deal. Just contact me. I will do it. Did you see this, Justin?
Yes.
Michael, get out of here.
I always do that. Get out of here.
Michael Andretti is going to return to a race car. He will team up with Waukesha Andretti United, which is going to the supercar team, for the 2021 Bathurst 1000. Neil Crompton, Michael Andretti.
I did see that. I thought it was Marco. I wasn't even paying attention.
And I just realized this is probably an April Fool's joke. Like, I just realized it. I've been had. It was an April Fool's joke.
Dang it. You've been had.
What's funny is I got someone else earlier today on a sports-related thing, and then I saved this thinking, oh, this is exciting, and then thinking, this doesn't really make any sense. So,
well, you know, if it was if it was Mario, it would be too obvious.
I go all day until 8:37 p.m. Eastern time before I get duped.
Oh, man. Well, you had a good run.
It was a good run. It was a good effort. IndyCar Radio, the IndyCar Radio Network, will be on IndyCar.com. Live on-demand radio race broadcasts. They'll have the broadcast schedule, broadcast team, which Rob Howden, again, member of the... Well, it was the Pennzoil IndyCar Radio Network, I would assume, that would return for this year. Again, haven't seen an announcement. But Rob Howden is the lead pit reporter. At least that was my knowledge. Yep. And he's listed as announcer, so... But they don't have his picture up. So, Rob, make sure you get your mugshot on IndyCar.com. But it looks like same cast of people. Mark Janes is the anchor. Davey Hamilton, the driver analyst. Rob Blackman, if you're a Purdue fan, you know that name. He's an announcer. Chris Denary as well. Rob Howden, Katie Kyle, Ryan Marine, Jake Query, Dan Ruzendowski. I think that's a new one. Joel Sebastianelli, Nick Yeoman, and Michael Young. So, pretty similar cast of characters. And IndyCar Radio, of course, always does an excellent job of covering the NTT IndyCar series. And I mentioned St. Pete earlier. They have started the track build as of, I believe, Monday of this week. So things moving along there. And anything that we missed, Justin?
I don't think so. I feel like it's interesting. I think we should bring it up, both the dirt race at Bristol that you watched more than I did.
I saw like 20 laps.
Which is 20 laps more than I watched. But also the testing of potential rain tires.
Yeah.
Today.
It's funny because it rained the day before, and then they had to put water on the track today to simulate
spray
rain.
It down. Now, they said it would be for flat tracks. How many tracks do they go to other than Martinsville that are relatively flat? I mean, could they use them at Indy?
This was for mile or less tracks. So
okay.
I would guess.
So, yeah,
no.
But mile or less tracks that are flat. I mean, they can't be highly banked. So, you know, Martinsville and what is my question? But
true.
I mean, yeah, look, NASCAR's trying things, you know, dirt. The dirt race had its advantages, disadvantages. I was excited for it this time last week, and then it got delayed. There didn't race on Sunday, so you had to do it on Monday. I forgot to set my DVR. I was behind by the time I got home. You let me know it was on. And I turned it on, and I was just like, I think was it Bell and Larson already crashed?
Yeah, when they crashed, I was like, well, there goes a lot of people's interest.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounded like it was chaos, obviously, on Sunday. And I think, too, part of me was, you know, we talk about gimmicks here and where NASCAR uses them and IndyCar and stuff. It felt like a gimmick to do it at Bristol when you could have easily just done it at Eldora.
Thank you.
I don't understand.
But instead, it'll be back at Bristol next year.
Yeah, they've already committed to it for next year for Bristol. I don't understand. I don't think, you know, Bristol doesn't need to be changed. I would tune into the spring Bristol race just because it's Bristol. Why put dirt down? And I think Eldora was, you know, the true dirt track you go to instead of a wannabe fake track that you have issues with. So maybe that was part of my turnoff that, you know, I really wasn't interested in another gimmick. You could have just easily went to Eldora and raced.
One other thing I want to get to before our trivia question and then tweets of the week. Driven to Win, Racing in America, presented by GM, open to everyone at the Henry Ford in Detroit. 24,000 square foot exhibit has more than 20 iconic race cars, 225 artifacts, 125 years of racing history covered. TheHenryFord.org. You can plan your visit, and I've looked at it online. It looks very, very cool. Some unique cars. IndyCar is featured. F1 is not featured really much in this exhibit, and I think that was just largely due to the pandemic. This was set to open last year, yeah. I think in like March, and then the pandemic happened, and they realized, yeah, this is not going to happen, and so they scrapped it until now.
It's at the Henry Ford Museum up in Michigan, Dearborn?
Yes.
Have you ever been?
I have. It's been a long time.
So
I definitely want to check this out.
The most fascinating things that they have there. I mean,
they have the Rosa Parks bus.
They have Rosa Parks bus. They have such random stuff there. They have some huge locomotives. But A, they have the chair that Lincoln was sitting in when he got shot and killed.
Uh-huh. The limousine.
And they have the limousine.
JFK was shot.
The JFK was shot, that, which is just incredible to me. It's just, it's surreal. It's just weird, but it's fascinating at the same time. Now, it's cleaned up, of course, and
yeah.
I think they rebuilt the limousine and continue to use it, in fact, I think, with Johnson. So, but it is the same, you know, chassis, so to speak, that Kennedy was shot and killed in. And I think,
is that a Lincoln Continental?
It is, yeah. And it's there, and, you know, you can see all the it's easily to see where they replaced, you know, trim and everything because of, you know, bullet fragments and all that stuff, and obviously, you know, blood and stuff, but it is pretty morbidly fascinating if you're into that sort of stuff. So both the car that Kennedy was shot in and the chair that Lincoln was shot in are there, as well as the Rosa Parks bus and a bunch of other stuff. It's a hodgepodge of Americana, basically.
There's a house that's like circular that I remember.
Yeah, circular barn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's, I think at one point they had the Ford GT that AJ Foyt drove in
really?
Le Mans or Daytona or something.
Yeah,
when I went,
it's just a hodgepodge of.
It's been probably
of stuff
more than 15 years since I
yeah
went
I
as
haven't
a kid,
been there,
but it was fascinating.
Yeah, I don't think I've been there, you know, at 25 years, maybe going on 30. So, really fascinating, you know. Day trip, you can do it in a day.
Go to the Detroit race and, you know,
yeah, there
check
you
it
go, and shoot
day.
Over
that's,
to Dearborn.
That's kind of what I want to do.
There you go.
All right, trivia question of the week from Indy Stats. Out of everyone who competed in the 2020 season, which driver has raced at the most tracks in their American open wheel career?
All right. American open wheel career, most tracks
yep.
raced at.
Again, they raced in the 2020 season.
Doesn't have to be a full-time person?
Correct. Does not have to be a full-time person.
It's just to be somebody who raced. It's easy to go one way. But I don't know if that's
don't overthink
too easy.
It.
Well, Tony Kanaan?
Yep.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. I was like, it's TK, but that makes too much sense. So,
guess how many tracks?
Just American tracks.
Well, no. Not just American, but like
but
racetracks that he's competed at for
with,
open wheel
okay.
for IndyCar. Yeah.
I'll say 54.
Whoa, really close.
Really?
50.
Oh!
Really close.
Dang. 50, huh?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? tracks. That's a lot of race tracks.
I wonder what his top three would be.
That's a good question. We should try to get him on again soon.
Yeah, we should get...
Oh, someone just sent us a thing on Peacock on their site. And yeah, there's a link.
Breaking news?
Yeah. This courtesy of Box This Lap 2X, Rick Jacobs, on Twitter. PeacockTV.com/sports/IndyCar. You can sign up for premium, and then it has, you know, the levels and... Yep. I don't know if it has a schedule, but that's the sign-up
link.
Well,
that's something. Now, is it being marketed?
I think this, like, just went live, and then wouldn't surprise me if they do this, like, tomorrow, honestly.
All right, what's the URL again? Peacock?
PeacockTV.com/sports/IndyCar. And then they have... Wow. Okay, so you know how we talked about that test at IMS? I think this was off-air. But the test at IMS next week on Thursday, April 8th, Friday, April 9th, that is listed on here. The start time, 11 a.m. on Thursday, 10 a.m. Friday for the Indy 500 open test. And then practice one, 11 a.m. Again, these are all Eastern time for Barber on Saturday, April 17th. So
yeah, they do have the open test, all the practices.
Wow, they have everything up. They have the... Wow, this is breaking. So they have the full schedule for...
Through the 500, it looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, through the 500. That is correct. So we'll have... Oh, this is interesting.
Oh, there's a lot to digest here.
There are some changes here.
Okay, what do you got?
So obviously, we know we have... You know, the first race is everything pretty standard. Now, for the... Texas races, they only have the race times, and I don't think race one is starting at 12:30 and race two is at 4. Is that correct? I don't think that's right.
No, they're May 1, May 1st, May 2nd.
No, I know, but the start time, it says 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m.
No,
there's no way. There's no way. So I don't think that one's built out, but the others are, including the Grand Prix, which that has some of it, but it's not fully built out. For the GMR Grand Prix, it is for parts. It really just Barber's the only one that looks, and that's not even fully built because this doesn't have the race time on here. Because again, you can't stream the race live.
Yeah, I mean, I just think this is Peacock broadcast.
Okay, so that's everything on here except that. But the Texas one isn't built out at all,
right? And of course, we'll have practice sessions at Texas and all that. So,
but for the 500, this is interesting. So, Fast Friday is May 21st, but then we have practice on Saturday, May 22nd. So, that's the morning practice. Then qualifying on May 22nd.
At midnight, it says. Obviously, the times are off because practice and qualifying is at 12 a.m.
Well, it says 12 p.m., but then they... Oh, yeah, I see that. So, that's clearly not incorrect. Last chance practice, Fast 9, practice qual... So, final carb day practice, 11 a.m. Friday, May 28th. Pit stop competition, 2:30. So, everything is pretty standard. They just kind of changed it up on you with the extra practice times. But it says at the bottom, schedules are included through May 2021 and will be updated.
And it says on-demand replays for IndyCar Series races will also be available on Peacock Premium.
And you can do a 7-day free trial if you want to try it out, see if you like it.
I don't know the difference between Peacock Premium and Peacock Premium Plus other than ads. Everything in premium without the ads.
Yep.
And you
it
can
says,
also
add due to streaming rights, a small amount of programming will still contain ads.
So what are you paying the extra $5 for? Monthly plan yearly plans, annual, $49.99 per year if you wanted to just sign up instead of do per month, because you know people will complain about the $5 a month.
Even though if you
equate
do that
it out
bit by bit, it's cheaper. Whether it's the yearly plan or the monthly plan, it's still cheaper than NBC Sports Gold was.
Yeah. Big shock.
Yeah. So
well, that's breaking news for us. Look
yeah.
at that.
So thank you. Thank you, Box This Lap 2X, aka Rick Jacobs on Twitter, for the scoop, because now we kind of have a clue. Everything looks pretty standard as far as the schedule goes. All right, you ready for Tweets of the Week?
Always.
First from Jack Aitken. Is he the, what, reserve driver for Williams? Is that right?
Yeah.
So J Aitken Racer is his Twitter handle. suddenly feeling a lot better about the 60 laps I managed in Sakhir before my spin. If you watch the F1 race, you know exactly what we're... Yeah, maze spin. In fact, they joked on that on the broadcast, which
yeah, I think is look, I watched the first two rounds of qualifying before falling asleep, and then the race, and I saw three spins out of Mazepin. Three.
Mazepin or whatever.
Mazepin, yeah, Mazespin. But it was a pathetic weekend for Haas, even by Haas standards, as low as we have, you know. It doesn't even make it through turn, what, three or four, and then Schumacher out there getting lapped.
Yeah. Poor Mick Schumacher. I mean, hopefully he only has to deal with this for, like, one more season.
Yeah, I think we're all counting down the days till Gene Haas and Haas is gone, which is a sad thing to say as it being an American team, but...
They really had no American identity, though.
No. I mean, they got Russian flags on their livery. Come on. I mean, that's, like, the ultimate... middle finger to being the American F1 team.
And the other tweet of the week, pretty simple. This from Is Indy 500 today, and they just tweeted yes. So that wraps it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That wraps it up.
We'll take it.
Next week, again, we'll have testing at IMS, April 8th and 9th. We'll be sure to cover that. We should have streaming, as we mentioned, on Peacock TV. I would assume IndyCar.com as well, full broadcast. We'll see what comes on that in the coming days. And wow, last week will be the last non-race week.
Yay.
For a while, finally.
Right, I'm looking at all this stuff that I get to watch on Peacock Premium. I'm a little excited.
Have you signed up for Peacock yet?
No, I have a free account.
Oh.
So I have to pay the $5 or $50 or whatever. Okay. I was waiting to pay for it when the racing came, because
same we both made the mistake last year of buying, and then they shut down the season.
Shut the season down. So we're waiting.
I'm waiting for the first practice session.
Yeah. So which will be per this schedule will be 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 17th. But we'll get to watch the open tests tomorrow or next week.
That's right. So. Lot to look forward to. Again, thanks to Rob Howden. And thanks for joining us. This is New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.